Next slide. First, I want to give you just a brief background. So, as we've already heard, Ontario's electricity sector is forecasting growing demands, an evolving supply mix, and a drive towards decarbonization. And as outlined in Powering Ontario's Growth Report, combined with IESO's ongoing large-scale resource acquisition efforts, building out the transmission system will play an essential role in maintaining reliability while the sector transforms and will be critical for ensuring system needs are met in the 2030s and beyond. To achieve this, significant investment in transmission is a key enabler for this energy transition. To support future transmission system expansion, the Minister of Energy has asked IESO to develop a transparent and well-understood competitive process for selecting transmitters and to report back this summer. This report is expected to describe the considerations around an effective transmitter selection framework, including recommendations around commercial options, contracting approaches, in the interest of fostering competition. The IESO has considered this approach in the past. We have conducted research around these topics, and the findings will help lay the groundwork for a more detailed dive into competitive transmission procurement. Insights, inputs, and recommendations from Indigenous communities, municipalities, and stakeholders are critical for the design of the framework and the evolution of the current process for transmission development. Next slide. So this graphic demonstrates a simplified transmission lifecycle. The IESO is responsible for transmission system planning in Ontario. The IESO will identify the transmission needs and recommendations through its established long-term system planning mandate. The standard practice has been for the incumbent to implement transmission recommendations. As you can see in the yellow box, the current framework has no standardized process for transmitter selection. To address this missing gap, the transmitter selection framework aims to formalize the process to determine which projects are designated for the competitive stream. The transmitter selection framework engagement aims to explore how transmission planning needs to evolve to support transmitter selection. This includes timing of plans, engagement with incumbent and prospective transmitters, how system and transmission needs are described in plans, and design, functional, technical reliability, and performance requirements. While the government has in the past undertaken transmitter selection, the intent of the transmitter selection framework is to recommend a more enduring process. The rationale for designing and implementing a transmitter selection framework is to provide developers, stakeholders, and communities with a predictable and well-understood process for competitively selecting transmitters for future projects. Also, an important note that all transmission projects are still currently under the process, the current selection process. Next slide. Your input and feedback are important. The transmitter selection framework is still in an infancy stage compared to LT2. So the IESO wants to understand, how do you want to be involved in developing this framework? Would you want to participate in upcoming targeted sessions? Targeted sessions are meant to enable effective dialogue between IESO, stakeholders, Indigenous communities, municipalities, and transmitters on key design elements and considerations. Thus far, we have identified three main engagement streams: public engagement sessions, focus sessions, and outreach. And lastly, what additional input or feedback do you think the IESO should consider as it embarks on this initiative? We encourage innovation, efficient procurement, and increasing competition in this space. So our plan is to send out a list of topics we hope to cover over the coming months. And if you are interested, please email us at the link below. We're happy to accept feedback at any time during this process. Thank you.
And we open the floor if there are any questions or comments at this time about the transmitter selection framework. We have listed three questions on here. They're mostly meant to be as a guide and not limit the input and feedback you'd like to share. If there are any questions, you know, please feel free to raise your hand or to contemplate this. We will definitely follow up with the feedback form and we welcome your input at a later date as well. I do see one person, Michelle, if you would feel comfortable to unmute yourself.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Michelle Moxley-Peltry from the City of Windsor. Just a quick high-level question. For whatever reason, my brain is not capturing this. So transmitter selection framework, are you guys starting from scratch? my understanding or my assumption has been your transmitters would be like your LDCs, like Hydro One. So if it's in Hydro One's territory, Hydro One does it. Is this something new and different? And if it is, municipalities may need more information and more like a 101 as to what it is you guys are proposing.
So we kind of mentioned previously that there will be potential to kind of adjust how our transmission planning process is currently undertaken. So we mentioned a lot of that is done within the regional and bulk system planning processes. You did mention something pretty correct here. A lot of the transmission, 98% of it, in fact, is owned by Hydro One in the province. So obviously there'll need to be some thought around what specific transmission projects will end up going down a competitive stream versus the non-competitive stream. Typically it's going to be under a corridor that Hydro One currently owns. It may not be suitable for a competitive selection process. It may need to be a brand new corridor, for example, and that's kind of the information that we've gathered from other jurisdictions that are running these kinds of processes. But again, happy to keep informed and keep the outreach going with yourself as well. If you have any submitted feedback you'd like to pose to us, please send that over our way.
I am seeing a couple of hands, but we did receive one comment from the Township of Childs. I'm sorry if I'm going to mispronounce it. I'm just going to read it out loud and then we'll go to the hands that have been raised. I'm pretty new to this. When you talk about transmitter selection, are you talking about selecting the method of electrical transmission, or is it referring to the organization that delivers the transmission, or both?
So we're looking at potentially opening it up to different transmitters and developers to develop specific transmission projects within the province. So again, I'll mention Hydro One again owns 98% of the grid that kind of operates the transmission in Ontario at this point in time. We're opening it up to other developers that may want to come in and build lines within Ontario.
Great. Ian, if you feel comfortable unmuting yourself, you're the next in line.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to pick up on the answer to the first question. In the event that a transmission line is needed between point A and point B in Hydro One territory, and is decided to go into a competitive process, how many more months or years is that going to add to the process before the transmission line is built?
So again, we're in the early stages of developing the transmission selection process. So again, which projects will end up going into competitive stream versus non-competitive? A lot of other jurisdictions that we've done research on, if it's again within the incumbent's territory or you know, their corridor, it's unlikely that specific project would be deemed to be going into the competitive stream. So I just want to make that clear in terms of an option. But yeah, again, please submit that again in written feedback, and we'll be happy to kind of reiterate those kind of things. And then again, as we're kind of moving through our focus engagement sessions, one of them will be line selection criteria. So that specific topic itself we'll be covering in one of our focus engagement sessions. And if you'd like to attend those sessions, please again, let us know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, just to add one more piece of color, is that part of, like Denise said, the eligibility criteria, is what we've seen from our jurisdictional scan, is that the lines that are going through competitive usually do not fall under the reliability stream. So there is a longer lead time for those projects.
Right. We do have one question about non-emitting resources. I'm not ignoring that question. I'm just going to table it for one moment until we wrap up the transmitter selection framework, and then we will get right back to you, John. I haven't forgotten about it, but the next in line is Rob, if you feel comfortable unmuting yourself.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Sorry, I look a little rough. I just had a hip replacement yesterday, so I'm in the recovery mode here. So. In Northwestern Ontario, we're getting the WAS, or it looks like the Waasigan power line is going to be built. So there's going to be a lot of capability for transmission through that corridor. I was just wondering what the next steps would be to fill that transmission, or is there anything else planned going forward after phase one and phase two are complete on the Waasigan line? And what we can do as a municipality to participate actively in that process.
So in my mind, and nice to see you, Rob, in my mind, in terms of additional transmission build out, that's always a positive. That kind of, you know, increases the bandwidth of what we can kind of develop in specific areas. So development of Waasigan means, you know, we'll probably be able to procure a little bit more generation in that pocket. And the, you know, we all know that the Northwest system was typically known to be a little bit more constrained, but overall, we can talk about that further in the procurement pieces, but obviously it increases the deliverability of what we can do in that region. So I think overall it's a positive. And, you know, in terms of getting the next steps ready for each of the municipalities, again, I encourage everyone to kind of submit that written feedback back to our team. I think that one might lie a little bit more with Dave's side in terms of the procurement for generation potentially, but yeah, please feel free to submit that feedback back to us.
I do see there are two more hands. Oh, sorry, Rob.
No, I was just saying thank you.
I do see there are two more hands raised. We just had one other question come through in the meantime. To confirm, this is not about sources, rather poles and wires only.
There's more, I think.
And that is correct, Caitlin, for the transmitter selection framework specifically. And now going to the hands raised, I'm sorry, the first name doesn't appear, but I see Keller Herzog, if you wouldn't mind unmuting, if you feel comfortable.
Yeah, thank you. So my question is links between the different procurements. In the context of the BESS and I suppose solar as well, there have been some questions in terms of whether the hydro corridor land could be used for locating BESS installations or ground mount solar. So in terms of fostering efficiencies and innovation, is there any views on that, or is it that Hydro One actually owns the land?
I think there's a question that I can take here. Yeah, it's such a great question, and we've received that in many variations. Pardon me. I think the kind of thing to know during our competitive procurements for resources, the ISO is not in any way involved in site selection. That is entirely up to developers in partnership with whomever they can acquire the rights to a piece of land from. And so should that be, for example, Hydro One, that would be well within their rights. If you've been following along, you may be aware that Hydro One has established some guidelines in terms of setting, for example, battery storage systems near their equipment. But yeah, I think the kind of main answer is the siting of generation resources is not a centrally planned function. We respond to project owners who find whatever land is available to them. If that makes sense.
Mayor Bentley, if you wish to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Thanks for the patience there with my mic. Just a few questions. So for the process of approval, what is it that you look for? Do you look for where they're running these transmission lines? Do you look that they're hooking on to an already established infrastructure? I know that you've said they make their own decisions about making deals with private landowners, farmland, etc. So what makes each application shine, and how are you going to get that approval, I guess? And then your maximum wattage that you're looking for, is that Ontario based, or is that for each municipality, we each have our own maximum wattage. How does that look? Thank you.
Again, gleaning from some of the research that we've kind of been working on, it's likely, again, what will be going down the competitive stream will likely be 230 kV transmission and higher. In terms of the additional piece of the question, like what we're looking at here, I mean, someone kind of put it succinctly, there's a probably a need that's going to be formed from our transmission planning group, which obviously is going to go through some evolution as well. But once that need is kind of identified, you know, from point A to point B, we'll do a line selection kind of criteria that we're still in the process of developing to decide whether that will go down a competitive stream or not. Again, like you mentioned, it'll be from station A to station B. Likely, again, Hydro One owns a good chunk of the stations there, so station connection with Hydro One will be required, but the actual development of the line itself, that will be procured, and we'll be taking in different, for example, RFPs, et cetera, to kind of see and evaluate which developer makes the most sense for that project.
Thank you. And then again, is there a maximum wattage? Like, I understand that you have so much wattage that you have to, the battery storage facilities are competing against. So is that municipally based or is that across the province?
So in terms of batteries, maybe you might be referring to, I guess, the procurement side. So maybe we'll hold off on that piece until Dave gets through. Or Dave, do you want to take a stab at that as well, or maybe hold off?
Yeah, sure. I can just answer that real quick while we're here. If we're talking about battery storage procurement, we're really at this point speaking about kind of ongoing LT1 RFP. And for that RFP, there were no locational considerations. So we had a megawatt target, and that could be located theoretically anywhere, notwithstanding requirements around deliverability. LT2.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it was from
battery storage facilities.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
So we seem to be receiving a bit more questions about the LT2 process. I have noticed that in the comment section, we still have a few transmission questions. I'm committing to follow up with everybody that has shared a comment through the chat. And also, we do encourage you to submit feedback through the transmitter selection framework, and we'll definitely follow up again with the feedback form following the meeting. But maybe in the interest of time, we can move towards the LT2 process and pass it over to Dave, and then open up the discussion to the LT2 RFP process.
Yep, and I'm back. Okay. There does seem to be quite a lot of questions, and I think that's what we're really here for. So I'll just give a very brief recap of what we discussed during the last session. So like we said, whereas during the expedited and LT1 RFPs, we were looking for capacity resources, which in the end came mainly from battery storage. LT2, we will be looking for non-emitting energy producing resources such as wind, solar, hydro, or bioenergy. There's a lot of policy questions that are currently open. We will be addressing those over the coming months with our peers at the Ministry of Energy, as well as with other relevant ministries. And I think the most critical aspect of timing, we will be looking for projects that can be in service for LT2 by 2030. And we'll be begin accepting, or let's say our proposal submission deadline, we expect to be sometime in the middle of 2025. And with that, again, we have a number of questions here. These are questions we do specifically want your feedback on, not necessarily on the spot, but you can submit those in writing. Andrea will give you all the directions to do that at the end, I imagine. But beyond that, I think I see many hands and questions in the chat. So
There were some questions in the chat. Perhaps we can take two that were submitted in the chat previously and then move on to the hands raised. If the ISO isn't responsible for site location, why wouldn't the RFP be written in such a format that best location sites are given priority to current hydro corridors where leased lands are secured or owned, as opposed to having prime agricultural land as a potential source site? And this also received 4 thumbs up.
Yep, great question. As we mentioned, we're not involved in site selection in terms of hydro corridors, as we've just learned all about from Denise. If I understand what you're, the same thing that you're understanding, those are owned by Hydro One, which is at least a mostly private company at this point. The ISO has no right to site projects on land that they own. In terms of prime agricultural land, this is something we've been discussing actively with the other relevant ministries, but really I think what it boils down to is that there are a lot of requirements around building energy projects on prime agricultural land. It is not a straightforward process, and it is up to individual municipalities to make that decision as to whether they approve a project on whatever land is within their jurisdiction.
And next, I'm sorry, the first name doesn't appear, but I see N. Trudell. If you feel comfortable unmuting yourself, you are the first in line.
Thank you. I think continuing on with what was just being said. So is there any possibility of increased ISO participation or support for these public information sessions? Often, there's a proponent and they have a plan, but oftentimes doesn't seem to be enough, support for those plans from either Hydro One, if they're a player, and certainly not from the IESO. And oftentimes these information sessions are, first of all, extremely important, especially if they're going to be somehow gating the process in LT2. And I'm just concerned that they might go the way that I've seen some of these best, local information sessions go. And if there's any additional support that the ISO is thinking of providing or could provide.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is, I think, what we hope is that today is the first step down that road. There's a lot to kind of unpack there. Part of the issue we saw through the expedited LT1 procurements with respect to community engagement and municipal support was down to the fact that these procurements really were run very quickly, and that was down to nothing other than a reliability need that was coming at us very quickly. So we recognize absolutely that that was not an optimal way to run a procurement, and yet we needed to get these resources built pretty quickly. So we certainly hope that we've got more time here for LT2, and that developers in turn will have more time to engage with communities before coming to council for support or whatever. We also do, first of all, we want to hear from municipalities, whether that's staff or councils, as well of course citizens, what you would like from us, how we can better support you, whether that's through coming to council meetings or meeting with municipal staff to help educate on the process and what to expect. There are no doubt complications which is to say, once we are in a position to be accepting proposals, it's very difficult for us from a fairness of our procurement process perspective to engage with communities with respect to specific projects. We can face legal action from other proponents in those cases. It just becomes very challenging from a procurement perspective, but we hope right now that we've got enough runway before that we're talking again about like mid 2025. We hope that we've got enough runway there to get out and help educate communities, municipal staff, councils, so that everyone can be prepared for what's coming. I don't know if that answered all the parts of your question, but I hope that started.
Thank you.
Ian, if you feel comfortable unmuting yourself, you're next.
I'm always comfortable. So I've got four questions, but I'm only going to ask one now and put me back on the list, please. So is there a list that's been identified by the ISO of where likely generation facilities are required, or is it anywhere on the grid?
Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off there. That seems like that was the end of your question. Good question, question that everyone wants to know the answer to. The basic answer at this point is it looks like the needs can be met by generations sited anywhere in the province within certain limits. So I think, this is something that's being actively studied by our transmission planning team, and I expect much more information on that to be available in the coming months. And certainly this is important information for everyone from communities to developers to understand. But right now the needs could theoretically be met by resources placed anywhere, although there will be likely some constraints as to how much could go in any given area.
Okay, I'm waiting to go on the next round.
Thank you. I did notice that there are a couple questions that did come through the chat. We still have a few hands that were raised that came in priority order. So next up, Mike, if you feel comfortable just raising your hand, I still have an eye on the chat and we will get back to those very soon.
Okay. Mike Fletcher, City of Ottawa, I have a question for Dave. Just with respect to the 2030 deadline or target for the LT2 to resources to come on stream, would there be any detriment if they came on stream sooner?
No. In fact, I'd say that it's likely that we will include provisions in LT2 to incentivize early operation 2029. For example, so we do see needs, energy needs begin to emerge, a small slice of the total energy need, but the energy needs really do begin to emerge in 2029. And I think we would look to be addressing those through early operation incentives, much like we did with both the expedited and LT1 RFPs.
Okay, good. I'll point out there's also, in addition to system needs, there's climate needs. So if the resources come on sooner, we can expect greenhouse gas emissions to fall sooner. So I mentioned it in the context of Ottawa having declared a climate emergency.
No doubt. Thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, Michael, if you feel comfortable unmuting yourself.
On unmute. Hi there. I hope you can hear me.
Yep.
So when you're saying non-emitting, is carbon capture technology on natural gas power plants considered non-emitting, or is that still considered emitting? As there are lots of technology out there now that is being implemented that can remove the CO2 from a natural gas plant.
Yeah, that is a good question. And I'd say it's probably a policy question to be answered but at this time, I don't think we are looking to open this procurement to offset fossil generation. We've been specifically asked by the Ministry of Energy to look at renewables, also as well bioenergy or hydro.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next, Dan McGrath, if you feel comfortable unmuting yourself, you're next.
Yes. Good afternoon. I represent a small municipality in Northern Ontario. My question is, will pump storage be considered in LT2 RFP? And could you explain on how the IESO looks at pump storage as potential supplier of electricity?
Yeah, great question. So again, notwithstanding potential remaining capacity needs after we've considered the energy producing resources. So pump storage, like battery storage, does not produce any energy, like it doesn't create energy. And so it's not what we're looking for in LT2. And Denise is the expert on pump storage if there are further questions on that subject.
Yeah, in terms of pump storage itself, the assessments are typically done through, we've done a couple of assessments on them through our unsolicited proposals, kind of guidelines for evaluating those specific projects. So pump storage is unique in a way that it does have a long lead time to kind of build out and get online. So typically we would need to kind of do a separate assessment on specific projects relating to pump storage if that's what you're looking at. But again, please submit and written feedback and we're happy to take that back as well.
Maybe I will just add to that. You know, we sketched out our plans for LT2, LT3, LT4. Undoubtedly, there will be more beyond that. We just kind of entered into a period of great uncertainty after that time frame. And we've also committed to, enabling a process for long lead time resources like pumped storage. So I would expect that, we know from our planning assessments that beyond LT2, we have both energy and capacity needs, and so I'm sure there will be a role for more storage on the system at some point in the probably not distant future. And so to the extent that pump storage can fit into the RFPs we're designing, then absolutely they would be eligible for something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Next, Lori Armstrong, if you feel comfortable to unmute yourself.
Hi. I was just sort of typing out just in case. But just a couple of points. So I guess one thing, there still is a lot of confusion for a lot of planners once, in terms of the role with renewables once the Green Energy Act was repealed, because I know even among colleagues, some think we still have nothing to do with it, some think we do. So I think there still needs to be, maybe that's an engagement with some of the other ministries as well to make, some sessions maybe that, clearly set out what our role is when it comes to renewables and the role of local official plans and that type of thing. Also, we had to deal in the past, I'm not sure, for your item two with the streamlining processes for our municipal support, if it's just looking for a resolution or is it looking for under FIT? I know we used to have to fill out a form, but unfortunately there wasn't consultation before the questions came out. So there was always one that would be something like, it ruled it out if you were zoned, the zoning included permission for a house, but in all rural Ontario, all rural zones all permit a house, even though it's other uses. So basically it precluded a lot. At the end, it ended up a lot of times being moot because the next issue was, we had people buying up large tracts of land speculatively for solar. There was no grid capacity. So it was then they couldn't even apply. So we had a lot of lands purchased in the area that with that intent, and then it was, there just wasn't the transmission grid capacity. So just, I think there needs to be that connection based on that past discussion. So I think that's just a couple of points, sorry.
Yeah, thank you very much for that feedback. We'd love to hear it. I guess on the very first point you made about the perhaps Byzantine regulations with respect to renewable energy projects, this is something we are actively contemplating both for the development community And I'm sure it would fit for municipal staff as well, which is to say some kind of level setting with the other relevant ministry staff to make sure that everyone knows what is up.
Thank you. Perhaps next we can move to Will, and then we'll transition to the chat and then come back to the hands raised. So Will, if you feel comfortable to unmute yourself, you're next.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much. Thanks for setting this up and providing all this info and giving us the chance to speak and ask questions a little bit. My question relates more to the topic of municipal support and the municipal support resolution. So apologies that I'm changing course a little bit. I know a lot of the questions previously had been more on the technical side of things, but this is something we had some questions as a municipality at the City of On about. I'm curious a little bit about your rationale for making this now a mandatory requirement for LT2 and what form you would like that sort of support to take. And I'll give a bit of feedback here on what the process has been like for us. And I've actually heard this from other municipalities as well. It puts municipalities and us in a bit of a tricky position to prepare these sorts of MSRs just because it goes against our development planning process a bit to endorse projects, even if it's only in theory, because we have development planning processes in place that proponents would have to go through before doing any kind of work like this. So, and it's somewhat inequitable in that we don't actually make this exception for other land use types. So it's putting us as a municipality in a bit of a tricky situation, but also because what we've found is we are answering questions from proponents related to a lot of this stuff when I think a lot of that should be directed towards the ISO. So I think questions or comments I have are about what form this is going to take. And my suggestion would be that it maybe doesn't need to be in such a formal written public document, but maybe it's just a PDF or something that we check off on for the proponents applying for LT2. And that, going forward, you made a good point there, Dave, about sort of the sanctity, if you will, of the RFP process and making sure it's fair and equitable to all. But I think there still needs to be someone we can go to or a line where we can ask questions specifically related to this, just because I know during the LT1, our team had a number of emails and calls go unanswered. So just to make sure that everyone's kind of getting the information we need, those are sort of the things I would maybe suggest for LT2. Thanks very much.
Thank you for all of those suggestions. I'm not 100% sure I detected a question in there, so please forgive me if I missed that. But
the question was, rationale for making the MSR or whatever form you want it to be mandatory for LT2 and what form that's going to take.
Yeah. So the municipal support resolution has always been mandatory. It's just a question of timing. And I think that, everyone would probably agree that before proposal submission is the ideal timing. Certainly, developers would prefer that and de-risk their projects a lot. I would think that that would be better for municipalities as well. Notwithstanding the potential crunch on time, but I think given where we are and where we're contemplating proposed submissions, I would hope we have enough time to kind of alleviate some of those concerns. But municipal support, this is a important policy piece for the current government, and I don't foresee it going away. It has been mandatory in both the ELT and LT1. Again, just a question of when.
Thank you. So we still have a few hands raised. We do have some questions. And just for a few moments, we're going to switch to taking some questions from that were submitted as messages, and then we'll switch right back to the hands raised. First question, can you please review the timelines for the LT2 procurement?
Yeah, as in go over the timelines again. I don't know if we've got a slide available easily for that, but I'll probably do this roughly.
I do have a slide.
Yeah, there you go. Ah, nice. So you see us here in January. one of the first steps that we need to do is provide a report outlining our plans to run this RFP to government. We can't do that without their direction. We're going to be looking for proposals in mid-2025. Before that, I think we expect to put out our first draft of RFP documents, which is to say the RFP itself, as well as the draft contract, sometime this like late spring, May, June-ish, and would be aiming to have our final documents on the street by the end of this year. So that period from, call it the end of May till roughly the end of December, is the period during which we will be negotiating publicly with all of you, as well as the developer community and whoever else wants to be involved in that process as to the actual terms and conditions of the RFP and contract. And then once proposals are submitted, probably takes about 6 months or so before we award contracts, obviously depending on the volume of submissions we get, and finally resources in service for 2030.
Thank you. The next, would the province update or change the existing regulations for renewable energy projects? The process is a nightmare to understand.
Yep. Alas, that is a question for the province, and I really have no insight to give you. I'm sorry.
Could you give background on the need for incorporating LT1 lessons learned? Can you go through your thinking or what you need to learn more about?
I'm going to take that question maybe broadly, but for this particular audience, you know, I think we've already heard quite a lot about what worked and in particular what didn't work about, for example, the processes around community engagement, as well as municipal support. You know, no procurement that I've been involved with has been perfect. I'm sure there are very few out there in the universe that have. And so, you know, we always want to take a look back at what worked and what didn't, and keep doing what worked and change what didn't where possible.
Thank you. The next question from the chat. With regards to municipal resolutions, we've had some difficulty with them for projects in the past. Trepidation on the part of councillors has been noted regarding endorsing a project that has yet to undergo a EA or proposed consultation. The resolution is useful for consultation and awareness, but it should be clear in the template, and then in brackets, preferably provided by the ISO to keep resolutions consistent across the board, that the resolution is approving the project in theory, but its success is still subject to all mandatory EA permits and requirements. And this received 7 thumbs up.
Yeah, thanks for that. That the language of the RFP is crystal clear as to the fact that not just the municipal support resolution, but our award of a contract does not in any way supersede any existing laws and regulations. So any project that is successful in our RFP must comply with all existing laws and regulations.
Thank you. We'll just take 2 more comments from the chat, and then I'll switch back to the hands up. I have not forgotten about you. Can the ISO provide requirements for posting the public meetings in local news media, length of time posted in advance, and municipal notification in advance as well?
We can certainly take those things into consideration. Yeah, I think the best thing we can do is let us know what you think would be the best way to handle our approach to community engagement, what changes we could make to make that process smoother. I will note, as always, that the more prescriptive we make our RFPs, the more likely we are to have to disqualify projects on basically technicalities. So we try to make them, you know, and in industry, our Ontario's RFPs are seen as fairly prescriptive. So we would want to minimize that where possible, while setting the kind of minimum standards for community engagement. But again, obviously, we are very open to feedback on that point.
And then one last question from the chat, and our team will definitely review all of the comments and all of the questions, and we'll make sure to follow up and consider. This one is, when a municipality provides municipal support resolution in the form of a letter outlining general support, but noting some concerns with particular projects, how are those handled in the RFP evaluation process? And then there's a second question, as what is the rationale for removing the rated criteria points?
So I apologize. I'll answer the second part of the question, and then can you just repeat the first part of the question? Okay. The rated criteria points we're removing for municipal support because it's going to be, or we are at least proposing at this point, we're open to feedback, that it be mandatory prior to proposal submission. So every project will be required to have it. There's no sense in having rated criteria points. Everyone will get the same number of points.
The first part was, when a municipality provides municipal support resolution in the form of a letter outlining general support, but noting some concerns with particular projects, how are those handled in the RFP evaluation process?
Basically, we would not accept such a resolution if it were not explicitly and unconditionally supportive of the project in question. And by unconditionally, of course, I do not mean the condition of complying with all existing laws and regulations, including local zoning, bylaws, planning, regulations, etc.
Next, we're going to switch back to the hands raised. Warren Howard, you were next on my list. If you feel comfortable unmuting yourself, you're next to ask your question. Thank you for your patience.
Okay, thank you. I find some of the discussion around the requirements for justifying projects, municipalities a bit bizarre. Having sat as a member of a council dealing with a wind turbine project in 2014 or so, the requirements for consultation both locally and with municipalities are clearly documented in Regulation 35909. It's, you know, here's the report you have to submit to the municipality. I mean, the problem was making requests for municipal support with no information, which, you know, if I was sitting on the council at the time, I would have laughed and said, you know, come back when you got some information. I think the key thing that needs to be done is in about 2013-14, 115 municipalities across the province declared themselves unwilling hosts. And that wasn't just a NIMBY thing. There were problems with wind turbine projects in particular that, as far as I know, have not been addressed. And I don't think you'll want to repeat that. So I would make sure that, particularly around setbacks from residents, that those issues get addressed quickly before you start talking about new projects. And I guess the whole thing seems to be assuming that these projects are going to be developed in rural areas, but the demand is in urban areas. And have you considered putting extra rating points on projects that are in urban centers so that the supply and demand are close to each other? Let's make LT2 the urban generation project. I'll leave it at that.
Very fair criticism and feedback. Thank you for that.
I'll just maybe let everyone here know that my computer, alas, is going to force me to restart in 2 minutes and 49 seconds, but I've got a couple of colleagues on the line here who are more than capable of answering any remaining questions.
Tom, you're next on the list, if you wish to unmute yourself.
Yes, what is the position of the gasification of municipal waste to generate energy?
That is a really great question. And if I'm being perfectly frank, I don't know if I know the answer to that right now. So if you send that to us in writing, we will get back to you.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll come on as a safety net to Dave's restart. And I think Denise is in the same boat. Just very quickly, I think on resource eligibility, we have some guidance from the government around non-emitting resources. I recognize that, you know, there's some broadness potentially around this. So if you can send us some feedback on that, we can make sure we include that as part of our report back to government, who ultimately would make the decision if there were any particular constraints around how they would define non-emitting.
Bruce McAllister, if you wish to unmute yourself.
Yes, hi, thanks. Bruce McAllister here from Chatham, Kent. Just quickly, I was wondering if you could just quickly explain the repowering option there, and what you refer to as a medium-term option. I take that to mean, let's say we have an existing wind project that's quickly coming up on its 20-year contract term. They could potentially re-up on a medium-term basis using the same technology that's in place, but there might be the potential to re-site some of these existing turbines under the repower option with new technology. Is that fairly accurate, what I'm interpreting that?
I'm waiting for Dave to just disappear off the screen.
I think I'm gonna just throw it over to you, Barbara, and I'll see you next shortly.
Okay. Just very quickly, it's a fantastic question. It's something we're working on with developers. I will tell you, in the many conversations I've had, repowering is different for every facility. It definitely, the easiest and most common definition I have found, which is basically you rebuild the entire facility, right? And those turbines that are about 20 years old, you know, they're probably in the 1 to 2 megawatt range, and they can go up much higher now, right? And so that is, to me, a clear-cut approach, is to sort of say they can kind of utilize the electrical infrastructure. But really, at the end of the day, they rebuilt the facility. And then there's a whole lot of different colorations and variations to this, where they would keep the towers, put on different blades, put on different parts. So that's something that we're working on with developers to better understand, you know, what those different options are and what that means from a procurement perspective. So hopefully that gives you, I know there's not a clear-cut answer, but hopefully it gives you some insight into this.
Thank you very much. We have reached the 3 o'clock hour, the end of the meeting. I know we still have a few hands that are raised, and we also have a few questions that have still come through the chat. Perhaps we can just take two more questions from the chat, and then one final hand raise or two hand raise, and then close out the meeting. I'll switch over to some of the questions. There was one, was more of a comment that we received around extending the deadline for feedback beyond February 7th. A municipality has shared, and I believe there were 8 thumbs up. To 2 months. So just wanted to share that with the rest of the team while I'm looking for a few additional questions to share. Maybe in the meantime, I did see Caitlin, if you wish to unmute yourself, and then I'll get organized on the question side. Oh, your hand has gone down.
My apologies. That was an accident.
Go ahead. You're just muted as a friendly note.
Oh, meaning my hand up was an accident. My apologies.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Our support resolutions for LT1 was essentially a commitment to engage in further conversation. If their project is selected by the ISO, that's all we could really do with a hypothetical project. Is that what the municipal support resolution is intended to be?
So maybe I'm jumping on, and I saw my other colleague, Mark, on the line. Not sure if he's still there. But yeah, it's ultimately we're looking for the municipal sort of support resolution for you to indicate that you are supportive of hosting the project and kind of deal with all of the elements that comes with hosting that facility. And we recognize that subject to your own sort of, you know, regulatory processes and policies, but it's an endorsement of a project to be supportive of it. Mark, I don't know if you want to add a little bit to that.
I think that was a great explanation. I think Dave mentioned the words a few moments before he dropped off as well, like de-risking. This is obviously an opportunity for municipalities to indicate their support, which kind of de-risks, well, from the proponent's point of view, but also the ISO as well. The last thing we want to do is to go through the proposal submission and evaluation process only for a project not to be supported by municipalities after the fact. So that's something that we're trying to get ahead of.
Great. And I did see one final hand raise, Julie Clark. If you wish to unmute yourself, and then perhaps in the interest of time, we'll just go to next steps.
Thanks. Hi, Julie Clark, the town of Oakville. The previous presentation, or the first one, mentioned that the LT2 did not include storage. So does that mean that any future battery storage opportunities are now off the table?
Maybe I'll quickly jump in and let Dave survive the IT reboot, so he can close off. So I think what we would say is that we're going to be running this cadence of a number of different procurements, both what we would call our long-term and our medium-term procurements, and then the need for each of those would be confirmed ahead of time. And where we would see an additional capacity need, we could see additional battery storage projects, obviously filling that need and emerging. But for now, obviously, we're buying sort of 2,500 megawatts worth of battery storage. So our focus is going to shift to energy. We're going to do some more analysis on when we foresee the next capacity need emerge, and that might provide some context and opportunities for existing or battery projects that maybe are still in the proposal stage or didn't make it through the procurement process. So maybe Dave, I'll let you wrap it up since you're back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right, Barbara. The analysis is still underway. I think we can say with confidence that by the time we get to LT3, LT4, we will almost certainly have residual capacity needs that need to be addressed by something, possibly including storage. And that certainly at this point may be the case still for LT2. So yeah, I think in terms of wrap up, thank you all for being here. Hopefully this was helpful. As I've said a few times, we do hope that this is kind of step one along this path towards greater engagement and hopefully putting everyone in a better position to engage with developers as they come looking for projects in LT2 and beyond. So please do send us your feedback in writing. This will you know, form an important part of our feedback to government on the subject of LT2, and of course the transmitter selection framework as well. And yeah, I mean, as part of your feedback, answer these questions, but also tell us how we can do better here.
Yes. And following the meeting, we'll definitely share again the form to receive feedback. And our team will definitely follow up with that as soon as the meeting is done. And as we do progress through these two initiatives, we will continue to keep you informed and provide updates along the way, including other opportunities to provide input. We always encourage anybody to subscribe to receive remote communications from us, and we'll make sure to follow up in the email details on how to do that. And as always, if you have any questions, please do feel free to reach out to our team at engagement@iso.ca, and our team would be more than happy to be in touch. Thank you again for everybody for taking the time to join this meeting. We are also planning to attend ROMA next week, and we do encourage you to drop by our booth and say hello, and also to participate in our learning lunch if you're participating in the conference. In closing, we really can't express enough how instrumental the efforts and contributions of municipalities have been in our significant progress towards meeting Ontario's future electricity needs. And before ending the meeting, we have a very short survey. Just if you have some time to take it, it really helps us consider planning and doing a webinar such as this one in the future. So I believe our team has put those up. We'll just give everybody a few minutes to take the survey, and please feel free to log off when you're comfortable. This is really the end of the meeting. Thank you again. We really appreciate your feedback and time. And of course, we'll follow up with all of the questions that were raised through the chat, and we'll make sure to also review all of the feedback and consider it. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Have a great evening.